Lemire again, Alec Paulette, Ernie White, Larry French.
Tough. He was tough.
I talked with him.
He's tough, and I'll tell you why he was. Not so much on his stuff, but he'd show you everything but the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I could never pick the ball up. You know.
That makes you
kind of hard. He'd show you his feet, his arms, legs, glove,
everything
and everything, butt and everything, and then you got to finally the ball come up there.
Mm-hmm.
He was about as tough as any for me to hit. Now I'll tell you that.
Well, he was not bad. And his last year, which was 42.
But you know, some pitchers that had the name, you know, wasn't that tough for me. Just like I mentioned White. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Up until the last couple of years that I hit against him, he'd just try to throw that fastball by you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That's the only good thing for
him. And that's not a pitcher. That's a thrower.
That's right.
And they weren't that tough for me. Not that they were easy to hit. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you take someone like Larry French, even though he was on the down turn of his career.
Well, his last year was really his greatest one in 42.
Yeah.
He was 15-4. And he went out with a one-hit shutout, his last win. Then he went into the Navy, and when he came back out, they wanted him. Ranch Ricky wanted him to come back to Brooklyn, and he had got picked up through his father. He had kind of inherited car agencies, two or three of them in California.
Uh-huh.
He says, I was too busy with those to go back, making an awful lot more money out of them than I could at that time playing baseball.
But you know, when he's talking about a pitcher with good stuff, I have to mention too that when I hit against the pitcher with Cleveland, the right-hander,
Bob Feller.
You have to mention Bob Feller as far as stuff is concerned.
Yeah.
I only remember hitting against him once or twice in a inter-squad game or something like that.
Yeah.
But in the All-Star game,
uh-huh.
I hit against him one time,
uh-huh.
and he hit nicked the collar of my.
Did he really?
You know, he could throw that fastball like a bullet,
and
then his curve was just as good as his fastball.
I have to
mention him, and then the Brooklyn Dodger pitcher, the. Left-hander, but I sit in back of him when he pitched a game in St. Petersburg and saw his fastball and the liveliness of his fastball and ball, his fastball ride and his curveball, and I just couldn't understand how any, what was his name? Finally went out with bad arm, sore arm, but
you mean Koufax?
Koufax.
Yeah.
Sandy Koufax.
Sure.
He really
wasn't much of a pitcher until he got to L.A. I mean.
And I understood that he was wild as could be when he was younger.
Oh yeah, they had almost given up on him.
I sat back at home plate there in Al Lang Field,
mm-hmm.
and I watched his stuff, and it was just amazing. That fastball was going to be fastball out, you know, and a curveball rolling off the table.
No pitcher ever had better 3 years, let's say, than Koufax's last 3 years.
Yeah.
But that elbow had
was
killing him, and you can only use so much cortisone and so forth. So he finally gave it up at a very young age.
Oh, yeah.
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 Now, you played night ball.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't play on artificial turf.
Never played on artificial turf. And I just wonder what how the adjustment from grass to artificial turf affects the ball player now.
It's got to have an effect.
Because you're playing on two different fields altogether.
I think it affects maybe a third baseman most of all. I think more hard balls. The majority of the batters are right-handed, and they're hitting the ball towards short or third the majority of the time.
Yeah.
And those are really bullets, scooting off of that hard surface that
you're going to have to make.
I would say you'd have to use your head a little bit more now than you did when I did, because when I played, all you had to adjust to was the field you was playing on.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it might have been slower, like in Cincinnati, or rougher, like in St. Louis, or
one thing or another. What do you think about agents these days? All the players got to have agents.
I really don't know. Apparently, it's to the advantage of the ball player.
Yeah.
I guess.
Unquestionably, it is. Some players could go and negotiate for themselves directly and do a good job, but some of them would be overwhelmed by the general manager. In the old days, the club owner.
It would be each individual player is a different.
Yep.
Mentally.
Yep.
Someone like me would get mad and walk out, you know, or something, you know. And when I played, how much I enjoyed baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, there's a limit on how much you can take. You know what I mean? There was a limit on how much I could take,
exactly.
As far as contract negotiating and so forth. And back then, I was told either take that or leave it.
Yep.
You know, take that. That's all we're going to.
In the old days, the owners had you over the barrel completely, some of the great hitters would hit 350 or something, and they'd be asked to take a $20,000 cut the next year because times are hard.
Spud Chandler, one of his, I remember he was the Yankee. Mr. Bear sent the Yankee players a little memorandum, you know, be in shape, pretty good shape when he comes to spring training. He was working out at the University of Georgia track.
Yeah.
Field, you know.
Yeah.
Running and trying to get in shape, and broke his ankle. He had a good year before, but he was just a rookie, you know.
Yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
And so when it come down to signing the contract, why, after his ankle got well, he said, "Well, that's how much we're offered. You can take it, or we'll win a pennant without you."
And unhappily, he was probably right.
Mm-hmm. And two again now, along those lines, I was 28. I was 28 when I was drafted out of Newark.
Yep.
The Yankees then had Kansas City in the American Association, Newark in the International League, both won the pennants in both leagues, and they had Oakland. Out there with a worker agreement, and they could put all their good ball players on the North roster. Only one could be drafted.
That's right. See, that's right.
So
and they did.
So when you asked me for my sentiments, you know, I said strike. Not necessarily strike, but get all you can.
That's right.
And all you can get, your worth.
Yeah. Right. Well. All right. What do you think about long-term contracts?
Long-term contracts. Well, when I played, it was always a one-year contract, and I don't know whether it was with everybody or not. It was
most.
And to me, I think it's probably more beneficial to the everybody involved a one-year contract. To me,
You've got a lot of company. Nearly everybody I talk to feels that way.
But when you talk about a long-term contract, the club thinks they're outboxing you, and you think you're outboxing the club.
Yep.
And maybe you don't have the ball player doesn't have the incentive.
That's the word. Main thing
so forth,
most
you know.
Of them bring
so
up. Yeah.
I wonder now, some players in the games that I watch on TV, I wonder if they have the right drive in the football game.
Carl Hubble and many others have said, boy, you know, that 3 and 5 year contracts, 3, 4, 5 year contracts, you just can't have the same motivation every day. You know you got it made, you got security for 3, 4, 5 years, you can relax a little bit. But human nature makes you want to put out your best, I think. And that wouldn't happen with all ball players,
no.
But it could with some.
No.
But then again, the owners have a point that if you sign a ball player to a 3 or 4 year term, and after one or two great seasons, you give him a big salary for 3 or 4 years, and then he tails off and doesn't produce in the next couple of 3 years, he's still getting that big salary, and the owners are left, in a sense, holding back.
One example of that is Parker with Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Parker with Pittsburgh.
Great example.
I can remember that Melton was with Pittsburgh,
yeah.
when Parker reported there, mm-hmm. and he told me that one of the best ball players I ever saw, Pittsburgh got.
Yeah.
He mentioned Parker,
yeah.
because he had the bat, he could run and all that, big boy and strong and so forth, but didn't turn out good. You know what I mean?
No.
Then he signed long-term contract and got on drugs.
Yep.
So,
I don't know. It depends
on the
person. In
the long run, it might be year by year.
Yeah.
Because every year you play for next year's contract.
That's the way the old-timers all say that they think it ought to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Did anybody sign long-term contracts back in the 40s?
No. No, even the very best players, whoever, Musial became a star in the 40s, and he was always a one-year man. Babe Ruth had always been a one-year man, and I don't know, really, I haven't paid much attention to that, just when the two or more year contracts became common, but it was relatively a recent thing.
Mel, you ought to finish that story about Bear and Spud.
Yeah.
Because tell us the rest of it. And about Spud and the contract.
Yeah, well, there's two stories that I get mixed up on.
Well, about you, who's paying for this phone call?
Oh, yeah. That year. Yeah, that's it. The year I tell you about where he was worked out on contract and on the track, you know, and broke his ankle, and then came back, and Barra told him, "Well, when you get ready to play ball, call me." And so he did, and Barra offered him a little nothing, what he thought was a little nothing, mm-hmm. for the year that he had the year before, his first real good year with the Yankees.
Yeah.
And anyway, Spud had called him. Spud called him on the phone.
Yeah.
And Mr. Barra's answered, and Mr. Barra said, "Now, wait a minute, before we get going here, are you paying for this phone call or am I?" Spud says, "Well, I'm paying for it." He says, "Well, you're wasting your money and my time."
Oh, boy.
So, Spud never forgot that.
Yeah.
Later, in later years, and when the Yankees weren't necessarily going to win the pennant and so forth, and Spud had a good year, Mr. Barra sent him a contract. He got it and read it. Pitch it up on the mantle. Didn't do anything. Said in 10 days or 2 weeks, contract's still up on the mantle.
Mm-hmm.
And said, so one day Barra's called him. And Spud says, "Well, now wait a minute." Mr. Barra says, "Are you paying for this call or am I paying for it?" He said, "Well, I'm paying for it." Spud says, "Well, you're wasting your money and my time." And he says, "Francis liked the ship." Francis was his wife, see?
Yeah.
She couldn't imagine him talking to Mr. Barris. And Francis liked the ship.
Oh,
but finally, so in a few minutes, Barris called back, "What do you mean? Yeah. What do you mean hanging up on me?" I said, he says, "I did the same thing to you that you did to me."
Right.
He said, "Well, what was that? What kind of figure?
Astronomical figure
that you wanted on that contract?" And Spud told him, he says, "Well, put it on that contract and sign it and send it back."
And you know what it was?